Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, one of my hard and fast rules for a successful relationship is that no one, and I mean no one, gets left behind. If the marriage isn't working for both of you, it isn't working, no matter how satisfied one of you is. But this whole idea of personal satisfaction and happiness in marriage is a rather new concept. And unfortunately, it isn't a completely positive one. Staying in a relationship is now a choice. And as a result, the expectations for the two people in that relationship have never been higher. And while some of the outdated and rigid role expectations have been tossed out, you know, women now are not just contributing to the family income. In some cases, they're actually out-earning their partners. You know, we find ourselves, though, in a period of uncertainty with what is replacing those old rules. And one of the biggest ambiguities is what role men are supposed to take on. The old admonition to man up doesn't seem appropriate anymore. Men are now asked to be sensitive and vulnerable, but not be wimps. So what does it mean to be a good man and a good partner at the end of 2017? Dr. Ken Druck, an expert on the psychology of men and the author of Courageous Aging, Your Best Years Ever Reimagined, is here to help answer that question. So Dr. Druck, Ken, thank you so much for being on the show. And really, we're talking about a really timely topic.
Leslie, we couldn't be. We're spot on. This is the moment in time where these core issues are arising in our culture once again.
Well, you know, and as uncomfortable as it is, and quite frankly, most people aren't very comfortable with change, it's a really fantastic thing to be happening, but hopefully it'll be done in a productive way, not in a destructive way. And that's really why I wanted to talk with you, because you wrote a recent article called Manning Up in 2017 that appeared on the Good Men Project, which is a great website. People, you should all should go on there. And so let me just start out with just an easy question. What are the challenges that men are facing in this day and age?
Well, we have many of the issues that we've been talking about for 30, 40 years with the awakening of the women's movement, the awakening of women's voices saying, hey, the world's changing, we're changing, let's roll, let's use this as an opportunity for men and women and families and the generation to come. You know, that's that awakening has set things in motion. And many of these things we were not ready to address and change. We were ready to take a look at them, make some token gestures. For example, the whole sexual harassment issue. I mean, we had sexual harassment trainings going on 20,
right.
25 years ago when occasionally a woman would pop up and say, I was terminated wrongfully. And we'd go through these trainings. And some people woke up and they took it as an opportunity to change the way they behave, to understand that they were hurting and disrespecting people and abusing people and preventing women from their greatest potential. And some people just buried it, and it went underground again.
Right. The women are being hysterical. They just misunderstood. It wasn't meant that way. They're too sensitive. You name it. Go on and on and on and on. Or worse, they bring it on themselves by the way they dress or the way they act or whatever. I mean, it's like, oh, my gosh, please stop that.
Yeah, all the ugly defenses, justifications, rationalizations, and outright lies that were told, 25 years ago have once again resurfaced. And we're seeing the same thing, the same kind of shaming of women, the slut shaming, the discrediting, and it's not that it's all happening in the same way. There's a spectrum of men who are being called to task, everything from men who are outright predators and pedophiles on one end of the spectrum who really either deserve to be in jail or held criminally responsible to men who are simply immature and still think it's cool and have no idea that they are hurting people, disrespecting people, and holding women back who otherwise would love their work, their jobs, and their lives.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can see it in just the way that, you know, men who stand up for themselves are assertive, and women who stand up for themselves are witches with a B. I mean, you know, it's like, yep. whoa, you know, or speaking forcefully, you know, the woman is now shrill
yes.
as opposed to, you know, authoritative. And,
yeah,
you know,
so we've had that double standard, you know, operating for a long time, and isn't this a great window of opportunity for us to grow up? You know, and manning up in 2017, as you asked, you know, is an opportunity for us to be, and many of us as men have woken up.
Yes.
And we are accountable. And we have daughters who are committed to making the world a safer and better place for, and daughters who are soaring and aspiring and to leadership and to becoming the best version of themselves, whatever they're choosing to do. So there are some men that have woken up, and it's a great opportunity for those who are half awake or who aren't awake at all.
But isn't that also part of the challenge? Because I think there's an idea that the pie is limited. So if we encourage women to be their best selves and to take on these roles, then somehow that means there's going to be less for men, as
yeah.
opposed
well,
to everybody being able to become their best, most productive self.
Yeah, let's rise together. You know, it's this whole idea that we're taking food out of somebody's mouth or somebody's position. Yeah, is the world a competitive place? Yes. Do women have incredible leadership abilities? So many women are discovering their talents, their brightness, their vision, their leadership, their trustworthiness, reliability, consistency, and so on. Yeah. And is that in the competitive workplace, is that a factor? Yes, it is. But there's an opportunity, whether we're talking about the workplace or sitting in front of the fireplace or at home having a relationship and co-parenting,
mm-hmm.
there's an opportunity for us to rise up together. But we have to do some things differently.
Well, and one of the things, and I know that you know this from all your past work, and it somehow seems to come as a surprise to a lot of people, and there's a misunderstanding that if women step into their own, I don't want to say power, but their own abilities, those abilities can be somewhat different, and biologically based, men and women aren't wired the same, and so therein lies a lot of the places for misunderstanding, both professionally and in personal relationships, correct?
Yep. Yes. The opportunity for misunderstanding, the opportunity for keeping women down, but as most high-level organizations of any kind have discovered, that there's an opportunity that's bigger than the threat. And the opportunity is a more collaborative organization, an organization led by a woman or who's managed by women who have their egos more in check. You know, there are some wonderful, whether they're biologically, culturally based, whatever they are assets to any organization and to any family. And they need to be recognized as such. And they're complementary of the assets that guys bring. You know, there are some beautiful and wonderful and powerful qualities that men have that are not ego-driven, that are visionary leadership, that are pioneer spirit, that are entrepreneurial. And they're a beautiful complement to women's skills.
Well, and I think that's a really important thing to point out, and it's one of the things that I talk about when I'm talking about relationships and marriages, is that it's the complementarity that when everything is working the way it's supposed to be working, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, that what you can create together using both of your skills that are complementary to each other is going to be fantastic. It isn't an either or, it's a both and.
Exactly. It's so true. And when it's working and clicking, you know, we have to learn how to do the math. It's, you
right.
know, it's complicated enough just to be a human being. You know, learning how to be a human being, it's like, wait a minute, I have to grow up and I'm accountable and I have to take
responsibility,
and it's on me. But then to say, oh, yeah, and by the way, you're going to have relationships. Wait a minute, there's another human being? You know, I have to figure out what they want and how they are and how they approach things. So, yeah, the complementary, when we learn to connect and to truly listen and to value each other's well-being as we do our own, then the complementariness, the companionship, the love, the intimacy, the connection, and the 1 and 1 equals 10 of that configuration is a blessing.
Absolutely. Now, I do want to go back a little bit to the article, and you talk about something called the male scale, which when I read about it, it's like, ooh, this doesn't sound very attractive. So what is the male scale, and does it still exist?
Yeah, Leslie, it does. You know, I wrote about the male scale. I was, you know, one of these guys back in the 1970s who started giving men's workshops around the world. Mm-hmm. It was called Alive and Male. And what I discovered in giving those workshops is how men process things. We have these processors as guys, and we have basic training as men that teaches us that we can, if we do this, it makes us into less of a guy, less of a man. We get demoted.
Real men don't
male
eat
scale.
Quiche.
Huh?
Real men don't eat quiche.
There you go. And if we do these things, it elevates. If we drink beer, if we act tough and self-reliant like we have no needs, and a variety of other things that really don't work in the world, and we show no vulnerability if we comport ourselves, then we get elevated on the male scale and we gain status. And status insecurity is one of the most devastating afflictions that a man or a woman can have, which is always looking over to your shoulder to see how you're doing, to see how you look, to see whether you're faring up. And this kind of insecurity keeps us down and is so self-limiting and even self-destructive.
So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because, you know, is it biological? Is it cultural? I mean, I know that in the Western capitalist culture, that is very much a, you know, stay ahead of the Joneses. You have to, you know, have the big car and the fancy house.
The American dream.
You know, all of that stuff to be considered a success.
The prototype. Yep.
You know, and that's really poisonous in so many ways.
It's poisonous. You know, sometimes we ask, do men die 8.5 years earlier than women? Is that a biological thing? Is that a result of the way we've lived and how we treat ourselves, whether we burn ourselves out, whether we live, you know, as prisoners of an ethic and a role that is destructive and corrosive? You know, it's probably a combination of both. But we've had an opportunity as men to really take control of things like our health, like what kind of dads we are. And, you know, and I'm happy to say that, you know, I've got a nephew and a couple of nephews who are the best dads. They're hands-on dads. They're not sitting in the waiting room waiting to pass out cigars.
Right. Yeah.
They're helping deliver their children, as I did. I was one of the first guys, and I was a lunatic. They wanted to lock me up, and I said, no, I want to be there. I want to bond with my kids from the get-go. And being a hands-on father for me was one of the most important things, and it's been the greatest source of joy in my life to be a dad. But for many men, it was something you outsourced because you feel helpless, and they're serial tasks, and I don't want to be doing that every day all over again. And
right.
You know,
well,
and sometimes
they're also even told they're doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Which is,
I remember walking around with my first daughter, with Jenna, walking around with her in one of these first carriers they made in Colorado, a little snuggly.
Right.
And everywhere I would go, there would be a woman asking me if my daughter could breathe. You know, it's like, no, she passed away 2 days ago. I'm just carrying her around.
I'm just carrying the corpse around.
You know,
yeah,
it's like, come on. You know, dads can be great fathers, caregivers, lovers. You know, we have the ability. We can be loving and attentive and nurturing, and we have these abilities, and we can use them and become great dads. So thankfully, a lot of things are changing, and men, you know, when I started, I used to write articles for Men's Health when it was a newsletter.
Oh, wow.
Now it's a magazine because men are taking their health seriously and believing that, you know, I don't have to – my dad passed away, didn't take care of his health at all, and passed away at age 69. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that I have to do that. And a lot of men are saying, wait a minute, I can take care of my health and live a long, vibrant life. I can age courageously and healthfully.
And, yeah, going to the doctor is no longer seen as a sign of weakness.
Right. You don't live in avoidance. You face in. And the core of courageous living is summoning the courage to face into issues rather than to live in avoidance, whether it's conflict avoidance, intimacy avoidance, you know, accountability avoidance, whatever.
So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking about men and the changing expectations for them in relationships and society with author and coach Dr. Ken Druck. And while it's said that the only constant is change, the social changes seem to be coming fast and furious. And the truth is, most of us don't really like change. So if you're finding it tough to deal with, and that's creating difficulties in your marriage, I encourage you to take action sooner rather than later. Give me a call or send me an email and schedule a free, no-obligation strategy call to get you and your relationship on track. You can reach me by phone at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And I really want to get back to this conversation with Dr. Druck about what it means to be a good man in 2017. So, what's changing for men? I mean, you know, right now we're in the middle of this Me Too, sexual harassment, women in the workplace, you know, women starting to earn as much or more than men. And, you know, I got to think that for men, their heads must be spinning. So what does it mean to be a good man in 2017?
Well, I think, you know, it is an accountability call. The whole Me Too movement is an accountability call. And yes, there are literally hundreds of thousands of men looking over their shoulder and saying, have I ever done anything to disrespect women that I work with, or to disrespect my own daughters or my own wife or past girlfriends or an ex-wife? Or, you know, there are men who are terrified and thinking, oh my God, did I do that? Am I one of those? But there are also countless men who are saying, you know what, I don't treat women that way. I have respect. I would never do something like that. I'm proud of how I've acted and how I treat other people with respect and dignity, and I've never held a woman back or been an intimidating presence or an insulting presence with women. Or if I ever was, I've made up for it because I've cleaned up my act. And
Right. So
a lot of men are feeling affirmed, and like it's an integrity reaffirmation of their integrity. A lot of men are also saying, hey, I need to clean up my act.
Well, and I think it's important to not to give people a pass, but to recognize that sometimes, you know, what we're taught is incorrect. It's not revisionist history, because I know that there's a whole lot of that going on too, but I don't know if Maya Angelou was the one who said it. She gets credit for it, you know, that when we know better, we do better. And
yes,
it's how do we teach people, not beat them up, but teach people, whoa, you may not mean any ill intent by what you're doing, but it's being received that way. And by the way, the problem isn't with the receiver of it. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I love what you're saying. And I think, you know, you're pointing to the fact that there's the opportunity for us to educate ourselves, and that you may be somebody, you may be a man who all this is helping you realize that you were not educated, you were not trained appropriately. You were not trained to be as respectful of women as you might be, or as respectful of yourself. You know, there are so many men who've thrown their own lives, their own marriages, their own careers under the bus by acting stupid, by not being educated about the effect they were having on other people. Or you might be a woman who's saying to yourself, you know what, I've preyed on men. I've used, you know, my sexuality in ways that aren't completely honest and fair, and that's the way I've gained power with men, and I need to clean up my act. So, you know, whoever you are, we, you know, and whatever we've done, we deserve a second chance, unless we're talking about somebody who is a predator who carelessly, recklessly, and volitionally hurts people. Then you don't deserve a second chance. But the rest of us who have done things and we can do better, we know we can become the better version of ourselves, we deserve to learn and to grow and to change. And we need to use this time as an opportunity to do exactly that, to realize I can do better than this. This has not been the best version of me.
And that, you know, when I talk with people, especially my clients, when they come in and they're pointing at their partners and it's like, well, fix my partner. And I said, okay, well, first off, your partner isn't necessarily broken. And second off, I know you can give me a laundry list of all the things that your partner's doing that's making you crazy, but I want you to look in the mirror and tell me what you're contributing. And that's usually when I never see my clients again, because they don't want to do that. But that's a really hard thing to do, whether you're a man or a woman, to take a look at yourself and go, oh, ooh. You, and I think that's one of the challenges when we're trying to talk to each other, because, and I'm a big proponent of how we talk to each other to be able to be heard, because nobody wants to be attacked. And nobody wants to be accused that if we want to get a change in behavior, we actually have to invite that change. But it's really hard when our partner, our child, a coworker, somebody who we care about, who is important to us, tells us something that we don't necessarily want to hear because it's not a positive, you know, view of us. And so it's like, well, no, that's not happening.
It arouses our defenses, and suddenly we feel, oh, my God, I'm going to be shamed, I'm going to be beaten up, I'm wrong, I'm going to be devalued, I'm going to be discarded. And, yeah, we get defensive. It arouses our defenses. So the question, I love, you know, the work you and I both do with couples is to set the tone. How could somebody speak to me in such a way that I'd want to hear from them? And often that is by not starting with the word you.
Yes. My golden rule.
It's starting with the word I, and often I find that, you know, in the past, the people that I've wanted to approach because something was going on, I often start with an apology, especially if it's been going on for a while. Uh-huh. And I'll say to them, you know what, I think I owe you an apology. They go, what?
Wow.
Well, I think I owe you an apology because something happened and something's been happening in our relationship. And I haven't had the confidence in myself or you or our relationship to bring it up. So I think it's put a wedge in our relationship. It's kind of the elephant in the room in our relationship. And can we talk about that? Because I don't want that elephant in the room. I don't want that tension anymore. I believe, you know, I love you. I care about you. I enjoy working with you. And I really want to get along better. Can we have that conversation? So I think the first thing is to ask permission. The second thing is to lead with it as your issue. Mm-hmm. It's like I want to apologize to you because I haven't brought this up to you yet, but I want to bring it up to you now. Can I do that? And I think that way you're taking responsibility rather than putting them
on the
back of
their
heels.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think articulating it. You know, it's the third thing, and just saying, you know, here's what happened, and here's how I felt, and I told myself he must not like me, or she must not like me, or here's the narrative I've been telling myself, but I don't know that that's true, so I thought it would be good for us to talk about it.
Right. Let me check in and verify whether that narrative is true, because that's the other thing. I mean, you know, there is the famous expression about what happens when we assume. But I'm telling myself this story. I don't bother to check in with the other person to see if there's any accuracy, and then my behavior and thoughts and feelings all now are, you know, wound up through this lens that I'm now choosing to look at you through, and you don't even know that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the last thing is really to when they start talking, if you've created the safe environment for somebody to open up with you, sometimes we blow the whole thing by not listening.
Exactly.
And I tell people, I want to see scar tissue on your tongue.
You know, biting it, yeah.
When you bite it, just to be quiet and listen and draw them out and ask them open-ended questions, not leading questions like, well, how could you have felt that way? You know.
Exactly.
It's an open-ended question.
Defend and explain why you're hurt, because you have to now justify to me that your feelings are valid.
Yeah. So I think the listening and thanking them for sharing is a wonderful doing all those things. That's the formula. That's the secret sauce for communicating, connecting, and building a conversation and opening the lines of communication in your relationship rather than doing what doesn't work all over again. Let's try that again since it didn't
work. Yeah, let's keep beating our head against that wall. You know, I know that we've been talking about men but we're also got into talking about everybody taking accountability and everybody learning to step up and do a better job. But going back, because how do we help men and, you know, women obviously too get there? What is there, other than hiring you and me and reading all our stuff, which I think would be great, and other people like us, like Brené Brown and some other people who are tackling this issue head on, how do we help men get there and see that it's okay?
I think, you know, your show is such a wonderful expression of how do we acquire the tools, how do we learn, how do we take the time to really think about these things and to apply them to our own lives. And so when people either read one of our books or listen to a show or take a workshop or go to a class or come in for coaching or counseling, you know, it's really to begin to work on, to do the work, to have a work ethic that says, I'm going to make it a point in this new year to become the better version of myself, and here's what I'm going to focus on. By the end of this year, I'm going to be 100% better at listening or at having the courage to bring issues up rather than sweeping them under the rug where we've been tripping over them all this time. I'm going to grow my humility to be able to apologize to people who I want to make amends with. You know, whatever it is that you need to do, I think, you know, committing yourself to it is the critical thing. And to say, you know, I'm a work in progress, because for me, everything, all these things work, but you have to base them not in shame, not in guilt, not in, oh, what a terrible person I am, I have to fix myself, I'm broken, but in self-compassion and in integrity. It's like, I can, and I'm going to, and I'm committed to becoming the better version of myself, but I'm also going to be kind to me in doing this. I'm going to not bully and brutalize myself, but I'm going to show myself kindness because I'm a work in progress.
Well, and I think that that's a really critical component, because beating ourselves up seems to be a national pastime.
Yep.
You know, because it really is... We are works in progress. Nobody's got it all together. Nobody's perfect. I tell people, there's not a perfect parent. There's not a perfect partner. Perfect doesn't exist. It's, am I willing to try to do better? And, you know, if I fail at something today, can I have the courage to take a look at it and go, what could I do differently tomorrow? And just, I mean, because I don't find any purpose in guilt and blame. They're based in the past. I really wish I had a magic wand because I really want a house elf, but that's a whole other show. but we can't change the past. All we can do is acknowledge it and move forward. And that, to me, is the sign of a mature individual, is being willing to go, yeah, I messed up.
Yep.
I did not
yep.
do it.
Humility.
I did not do that well. Let me try
humility.
To. I'm sorry. Let me do better.
Yep. And I suggest people to do two things. That they, number one, take yourself out of the torture chamber of guilt and
mm-hmm.
shame,
mm-hmm.
because it has no redeeming value for you to be in there.
Nope.
Put a big stop sign in front of that.
I like that.
And number two, if you are hyper self-critical, like many of us are, because mm-hmm. we're trying to be perfect, like you said, get yourself out of that courtroom, because the only person that's in that courtroom with you is a prosecuting attorney. There's no there's no defense attorney to say, Your Honor, I object. There's no Your Honor. There's no judge. And there's no jury. There's nothing fair in there. It's an irrational self-punishment, self-accusation, self-deprecation. Get yourself out of the courtroom of blame and start treating yourself and speaking to yourself with kindness and fairness and allowing yourself to be that work in progress who's determined to be better.
Yeah, because fairness doesn't mean letting you off the hook. Fairness actually means taking a look at what's really happening and then deciding, okay, what's okay and what needs maybe some tweaks and improvements on. And again, it's not about beating people. Because I always tell people, I said, you're saying this to yourself. Would you say this to your child, your best friend? And they look at me like I'm crazy. Well, of course not. It's like, well, then why are you saying it to yourself?
Exactly.
But that's
exactly
what we do. And
I love what you said about, you know, fairness, because, you know, sometimes it's taken me getting angry. I've got to do something. So using anger, not to punish myself, but using anger to mobilize myself and to say, all right, I've hit that critical point where enough is enough. I really need to do something here. And using it as motivation and summoning the courage to do something constructive and move forward.
Absolutely. Well, we could be talking about this, and I may have you back on to talk about this some more, because this is an ongoing topic, and I think that it can't be talked about enough. And I do think that the important thing is to talk about it as objectively and non-judgmentally as possible, because we're all just kind of swimming upstream trying to figure out how to get there. So can you please tell people where they can find out more about what you do and how they can find a path to making themselves better, stronger, faster?
Thank you so much, Leslie. And people, if people want to find out more or connect with me, the best thing probably to do is to go to my website, www.kendruck.com, KENDRUCK.com. And you'll find there, you'll find how to get a hold of my latest book, which I'm so proud is on the Amazon bestsellers list now and has been since it came out. And that's The Courageous Aging, Your Best Years Ever Reimagined. And you could find out about workshops and where I'm speaking and where I'm traveling in the country, where I'm on TV and radio and all that good stuff. I might be giving workshops in your neck of the woods, which I love.
Terrific.
So, yeah. So all the information is probably best to find it there.
Great. Because the good news is, as we were talking about before, the old gender stereotyped roles of relationships have changed. That's also the bad news. And even though those roles were straitjackets for both men and women, at least those roles were clear. So now we're talking about having the freedom to redefine our relationship roles, and that's scary. But it also allows us, and here's the key, people, to be more authentic. And as a result, we can have real intimacy that we really want and much deeper connection, which is really going to make the world a much better place. So keep listening, and until next week, stay loving.